No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Together with my host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affects the lives of all of us. So call in and be part of the conversation at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype questions to BBSRADIOPR. And tonight we have a special guest, a dear friend of mine, an old friend of the show, the first elected representative of the District of Columbia, Charles Moreland. Thanks for being on the show, Charles.
Senator, thank you so very much for having me, and
yeah,
I want to take this opportunity to thank you also for all that you do, all that you have done for D.C. statehood. We would not be here where we are if not for you and all your hard work.
Well, it's true that we would not be here if it weren't for people like you and Johnny Barnes and Walter Fauntleroy and all the people that started this years ago. And I wish that you would start our conversation tonight, Charles, by telling us about the story that I've heard you tell with Johnny about going out and being against the statehood bill to start with on behalf of Representative Fauntleroy and how you changed positions on that.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to work with Johnny Barnes and Congressman Walter Fauntleroy leading up to the 1978 passage of the D.C. Voting Rights Amendment. Now, the D.C. Voting Rights Amendment would have given us two senators and one U.S. representative. We still would have been disenfranchised, and at the time, it was considered an incremental approach, and Congressman Fauntleroy's position was, well, let's get this in place, and once we get two senators and one U.S. representative, that'll give us leverage to fight for statehood. Well, at the same time, Julius Hobson, Josephine Butler, and the founders of the D.C. statehood movement were saying, no, freedom in increments is still a political slavery. We don't want our freedom in increments. And so they were staunch opponents of the D.C. voting rights bill. The bill was passed in 1978, and it required ratification by 38 states. And so during the process of the hearings on Capitol Hill, Johnny Barnes and I were charged with the responsibility of going out in the community and convincing Washington, D.C. citizens that this incremental approach was the right approach. So Johnny and I tell the story about how Julius Hobson and Josephine Butler, instead of us converting them, they converted us to statehood. And I do recall that shortly after I was elected, well, when I was running for U.S. representative, Josephine Butler and the statehood party opposed me. They were fighting against me. They thought I was going to be just an agent provocateur, and I really didn't support statehood. Well, once I was elected and had a number of demonstrations, and we were protesting and so forth and so on, Josephine Butler came to me, and she said, Charles, I was opposed to you. She said, but now I realize you are very serious about what you're doing. So after that, Josephine Butler and the Statehood Party, they always, they supported me.
Well, and it was to our benefit in Washington that they supported you and that you were elected. But I think, you know, there's a very important lesson there, because certainly when I started, I believed in statehood, but the only thing out there when I started was the Voting Rights Act, which would have given Eleanor Holmes Norton a single vote in the House and would have kept us disenfranchised and probably extended our disenfranchisement, in my humble opinion, because once we got a single vote, it would have taken away our moral authority of not being represented at all. And but yet I stood and I supported it with her because I was naive and I didn't understand that, you know, that you could stand up for statehood. And just like you, there were people out there like Anise Jenkins who were, you know, beating the drum for statehood. And I didn't get it at first. But then I realized, yeah, you know, a single vote's not going to help us. Statehood is where we need to be. So I think we've all come to that conversion. And I must say to you now publicly that very early on, you were an advisor to me, Charles, and your advice has been really, really instrumental in my development to be a statehood advocate. You know that we have a hearing coming up on Thursday of this week. We will, for the first time in almost 25 years, have a hearing on a statehood bill before the Government Operations and Reform Committee, which is chaired by Elijah Cummings from Maryland, a dear friend of District Columbia, by the way. He's always been very supportive of us. We have 219 co-sponsors for H.R. 51. You think I would know that. For H.R. 51 in the House of Representatives. And by the way, we should give a shout out to Kim Schreier, a Democrat from Washington's 8th District, who is the most recent co-signer of the bill, bringing us to 219. So what do you think the significance of all this is, Charles? Because we're all out there beating a drum saying that this is, you know, this is the biggest thing that's happened on the statehood stage in years and years and years. What's your opinion? Is it the biggest thing that's happened in a long time?
Well, Senator, I think you started the conversation off correctly when you talked about a wild goose that, you know, the supporters of self-determination for the District of Columbia were chasing in the name of D.C. voting rights. Now, all who believe that D.C. voting rights was the answer, it should be clear now that they were tricked, they were hoodwinked, they were bamboozled, and they were had. Even if the bill had been passed, you wouldn't have had anything at all. We still would have been disenfranchised and left with second-class citizenship. The so-called D.C. voting rights bill resembles democracy in the same way that a lightning bug resembles a bolt of lightning. While a few of the principles might be the same, there's a tremendous difference in the end product. The D.C. voting rights would have left us totally disenfranchised without any control over our budget, so forth and so on. As to where we are now, we also have to be very, very careful about going about it the right way and being very, very serious about it. This hearing that we're going to have is an opportunity for us to just put this shameful form of government that we have now to you know, to let all of humankind, to let the world see the shameful hypocrisy of America. The citizens of Washington, D.C. are people oppressed by shameless tyrants. Our democratic rights are openly denied to us without any pretense of reason or justice. The members of the United States Congress parade and strut us in front of the Capitol, this grand edifice at the crest of Capitol Hill, and boast of democracy and freedom, and yet they require D.C. citizens to live under conditions no better than political slavery and continued servitude. I don't think we ought to be deceived and think that the Congress is ready to give us statehood. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. But this is a great opportunity for us to let the world know. But this opportunity has to be followed up by action. The world needs to understand, the nation needs to understand, that this is not the slavery that we talk about when we say political slavery of balls and chains on arms and legs. No, this is a modern, sophisticated kind of slavery that masquerades as a privileged position at the master's table, a kind of slavery that bamboozled Uncle Tom. It's a slavery of taxation without representation, congressional control boards, presidential appointment of our local judges, 30-day reviews of legislation, confused minds, distorted facts, and basic human dignity smothered on the bald-faced claim of congressional privilege. So this is what we need to let the world know, and the hearing is just the beginning. It is an opportunity to mobilize D.C. residents, because we will never become a state until we make a just demand. You and I talked earlier about why is it that we are not a state? What has taken so long? What is the problem? And we talked about political inertia. Inertia, of course, is the tendency to do nothing or remain unchanged. And like an object at rest, this political system that they have in place will stay in place until it's pushed aside by an irresistible force. In our case, judicial decision is out. We've tried that. We're now left with political action. And that's going to require D.C. citizens to stand up and demand, to never stop, to demonstrate, to find a way to resist this form of tyranny.
Well, you know, I mean, I think the point you make is so important, Charles, because you're absolutely right. At best, this is a beginning. One of the things that we're doing here is we're trying to invoke the image of the Memphis sanitation workers' strike. You remember that this pivotal moment in the civil rights movement, the sanitation workers held signs that said, "I am a man," because they wanted to make the basic point that I'm like you and I deserve to be treated with respect. And we've just actually done buttons and other stuff for the hearings that say, "I am a citizen." We're saying exactly the same thing. We're not asking for anything. We're not asking for any dispensation or any favors or any special treatment. We're just asking to be treated like every other citizen. But if we don't rise up as a group and make that demand, you know, as you well put it, Charles, and as Frederick Douglass said before you, power can seize nothing without a demand, never did and never will. So this, as I see it, this hearing is the place where we make our demand. If we can't follow up that demand with action, it's never going to happen. Let me ask you, why do you think we're still asking for voting rights? I see the mayor putting out stuff, and DC Vote and other people that are involved in this putting out vote stuff saying we're going to have a hearing on voting rights and statehood. I mean, why are we still using the voting rights thing? Is that on purpose, do you think? Because it certainly is a capitulation from statehood.
Well, you're absolutely right, Senator. As I talked about earlier, I have pursued this incremental approach. I know how senseless it is, but I also know that there are individuals who are actually agent provocateurs who don't yes. want us ever to achieve statehood, and they yes. hold this so-called voting rights out as though it's going to be a solution. I mean, to even call this what they're talking about a solution to our problem is just they're just trying to defeat statehood with this so-called incremental approach. They know it will not solve our problem. It's a distraction by individuals yeah. who don't want statehood. And fortunately, recently we've gotten our elected officials under the leadership of Mayor Muriel Bowser, and I want to commend her for that, so that we are committed to statehood. We're committed to statehood. Well, before our elected officials, from the top all the way down, I don't want to call any names, but most of them were fighting for so-called voting rights. When voting rights would still leave us disenfranchised. The United States stands alone among democratic governments in denying the citizens of the nation's capital, full citizenship rights. All other Americans inherit equal freedom and full participation in the American democratic process as a birthright. But the D.C. citizens are denied these same rights from birth till death. So when somebody offers you a partial solution or asks you to wait for another, that same person is asking you to accept enslavement.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Well, we have a caller. Mark Jones, let's see if he has a question. Mark, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, do you have a question for me or for Representative Moreland? Thanks for calling in.
Well, I have a question. I know statehood has been on our agenda for some time. What is the likelihood that we'll, first of all, ever achieve it? And if so, what is our pathway to achieving it?
Well, I'll let Representative Moreland answer that question. But the short answer for me is that yes, we'll achieve it because, as Charles just pointed out, we're the only democracy in the world that does this. So it's an anachronism that has to die sooner or later. But what do you think our pathway is, Charles?
Well, the only real pathway to statehood is for the people of the District of Columbia to stand up and demand statehood. I mean, we've been begging and pleading for statehood in the humblest way as any slave has ever pleaded for freedom. But in reality, for us to think that the United States Congress is one day just going to wake up and decide to give us our rights is delusional. We need to demand our rights. We need to demand our rights, and that's going to require some level of civil disobedience. This system of government, if you offered it to anybody else anywhere in the world, they would take up arms. And so while we certainly don't want to advocate anybody do anything that's not consistent with Martin Luther King and this nonviolent opposition to oppression, we we need to stand up. We, the citizens of D.C., accept the unacceptable every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just add to that, Mr. Jones, that, you know, people have criticized Barack Obama. A few years ago, when we were out stumping for statehood, and the president said that he was in favor of it, there were people that criticized him for not doing more. And you know what I always used to say is, look, when you can only get 500 people, and that's a stretch, believe me, 500, more like 250 people to show up for a rally in the District of Columbia and support a D.C. statehood, when there's only 250 of us that believe in it, if I was his advisor, I think in the White House, I would say, don't stick your neck out on this, Mr. President, because we can't even get the people of the District of Columbia behind it. So I think you're absolutely right, Charles. We have to get momentum and get people to protest. Johnny Barnes, who was a colleague of Representative Moreland at one point, said, tells a story about how they wanted to make Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday a holiday, and they couldn't get any co-sponsors on the bill. And then all of a sudden, Stevie Wonder wrote a song about it, performed it on the West Lawn of the Capitol, and 50,000 people showed up. And the next day, people were standing in line to be co-sponsors. And Johnny has said on several occasions, you give me 50,000 people on the West Lawn of the Capitol, and I'll give you statehood. And I believe that's true. I believe when we get, when we go from 250 or 500 or 1,000 people gathered in some distant location to 50,000 people on the lawn of the Capitol, then we'll get statehood. And look, if only one out of every 10 citizens in the District of Columbia showed up, that'd be 70,000 people. So I think that's really what we got to do, Mark. Thanks for calling
great,
with your
great,
question.
Great question, Mark. And I think you understand and you know the answer. We have to continue to educate you. What is the pathway? Well, let's look at this hearing as a step, and let's the citizens of Washington D.C. We need to continue to educate D.C. citizens. But we need to begin to organize. Unbeknown to most Americans and the rest of the world, D.C. citizens are subject to what taxation without representation. But we have to be bold in resistance. And it needs to start with our elected officials, I think. I want to give Mayor Bowser credit again. And initially, Senator Brown, I think you understand, I was kind of reluctant about having another referendum to determine whether or not D.C. citizens really support statehood. Because you need to, at just one time, let people know you really want to be free, you want statehood. But as it happened, we had the largest percentage of D.C. citizens in our history turned out and supported D.C. statehood, okay? But still, every day, our citizens wake up every morning and submit humbly to this unbearable tyranny. Every day, D.C. citizens serve up freedom at the banquet table of democracy while we are starving for freedom. As the members of Congress feast at the banquet table of democracy, D.C. citizens need to see that and understand that we are, in fact, political slaves. Most people don't want to be called slaves, but the worst kind of slave is what? A slave that won't even admit to being a slave.
That's right.
And we need to let everybody know that we won't rest, and we need to mobilize and not cease our mobilization until taxation without representation is brought down, and we have full first-class citizenship as bestowed upon every other American at birth.
Well, you know, and the provocateurs that now that you were talking about elected officials, and the provocateurs that you talk about are still out there in full force. Just so people realize this, before the Committee on Oversight, the same committee that's going to hear this bill, we have a lovely member of Congress, Mark Meadows, from North Carolina, who really doesn't like the district, one of those people that doesn't like the District of Columbia. And for those of you who might not understand, any congressman, any member of Congress, senator or representative, can interfere with the business of the District of Columbia. It's absolutely ridiculous. But Meadows has called for a hearing on Jack Evans, who's a councilman, the oldest serving councilman in the District of Columbia, and has been accused of malfeasance. He wants a hearing. And in his letter to Elijah Cummings, he mentioned four or five times that this should be the reason that the District of Columbia does not get statehood, because there's corruption in the District of Columbia. I am from New Jersey. And let me tell you, if that was the criteria for representation, you know, having everybody be, as clean as a rubber in sheets, as they say, New Jersey would have been disenfranchised a long time ago. Chicago would have been disenfranchised. There are plenty of it's really not the issue, right? It's comparing apples and oranges. But they're out there, and they use whatever little thing they can use to stand against the District of Columbia. So what do you think about the whole Evans thing? Do you think that's a problem for us, or do we need to address that? I don't think we need to address it, but I don't know how you feel about it, Charles. What do you think? Hello, Charles, are you still with us?
Senator, I'm still with you. Would you repeat that? I'm losing the signal.
I'm sorry. Mark Meadows from North Carolina wants to have a hearing on Jack Evans, and he's saying that because of Jack, we shouldn't get statehood, because he's using this as an argument against statehood, because he says Evans is corrupt. And you know, first of all, that's not been proven. And second of all, my opinion is, what the hell does that have to do with statehood? You know, there's no state in the union that hasn't had someone accused of malfeasance. But we don't take their rights away. So what do you think? What do you think of this maneuver? Is this something that's going to be easy to get over, or have we really given, you know, aid and comfort to the enemy here?
Well, Senator, you know, you and I both, we've been around long enough, and we've seen every trick. Like I said, there are those who are opposed to statehood, and for many reasons. But a pastor in the 18th century said, "Man's capacity for justice makes democracy possible, but his inclination to injustice makes democracy necessary." When you talk about forms of government and denying people their rights, as you understand and you know, initially, well, there have been many forms of government that the Congress has foisted on the District of Columbia. The initial system was the commission system. And I can recall that there was the Congress appointed an individual to run the District of Columbia. His name was, they called him Boss Shepherd. Well, yeah. Boss Shepherd was a known drunk. And he was just totally incapable of running a city, let alone the nation's capital. And the Washington Post wrote at one time that the Congress could appoint anybody to manage and run the District of Columbia, even a clown. And they stated that, in fact, at one time we did have a clown, and that was Ball Shepherd. So that's democracy, no matter how you look at it, is a superior form of government. In a democracy, people making decisions for themselves, spending their own resources for their own best interests, are presumed to be more capable and better motivated to find solutions that are to the problems than the most well-intended dictator. The home rule system is not democracy. It is a dictatorship of the powerful over the powerless. And that is an affront to the letter and the spirit of the United States Constitution. Home rule is another name for tyranny. It allows Congress to tell us how to spend our own money. It allows Congress to veto legislation passed by our D.C. Council. Home rule allows the United States Congress to pass any law that it wants to pass in D.C. Under home rule, the United States Congress can dismiss our elected officials and abolish our government at any time. Okay?
That's right.
That's an inferior form of government. That is not democracy. That is a shame to the United States and a blemish on our democracy.
That's right. And Julius Hobson used to call it home fool, didn't he?
Home fool.
Yeah. And that's certainly right. And they'll use whatever excuse they can use. In fact, I was in a hearing one time where we had this guy, Louis Gohmert, from Texas, say that if the District of Columbia got representation, every military base in America should have representation because they're also federal enclaves, with the clear understanding that every military base in America does have representation because they're contained within a state. So, you know, even when it's absurd, even when the excuses are absurd, they're out there, they're using them. Let me ask you, do you think there's a heightened, we're getting more more kind of support nationwide? For example, we've had every Democratic candidate who's running for president say that they're in favor of D.C. statehood. This is a question that we've put to them, and every one of is has answered in the affirmative. We're also talking about things like reparations. We had somebody on the show that talked about reparations. You know, if we're talking about healing America and making America whole again, getting past the divisiveness, it seems to me that statehood is right in the middle of that argument, that we can't be whole, we can't be a more perfect union unless we include everybody in the union. Do you think this momentum nationwide is a help to us? Do you think that can help us?
I think it definitely has helped us. But you mentioned a more perfect union. Let me tell you what that means to me more than anything else. There's so many issues in the United States that there's a small margin of difference between those on the right and those on the left, or those who believe in justice and those who support injustice. The problem when you exclude anybody from a democracy, and that is the strength of a democracy. The democracy is designed to make sure the will of the majority is respected. And so when you cause an imbalance, whether it's from voter suppression, gerrymandering, or disenfranchisement of 700,000 people, you tilt that balance so that injustice has a greater foothold than it should have, and also these are times when not just the United States, not just the District of Columbia, but the world is in peril. The world is at risk. You have individuals who are not concerned about the environment, are not concerned about our children and our grandchildren. And so two more senators and another United States representative. The voice of the citizens of the District of Columbia is needed. It is necessary. It is missing on the world stage. It is missing from Congress. And that might make a difference. And so when you talk about the need for democracy, disenfranchising probably the most educated, knowledgeable, understanding individuals in the country, it's bad for the country. The country needs us. They need our voices. They need your voice, Senator Brown. I know you. I know that you understand. If your voice was in the Senate, it would make a difference. If Muriel Bowser was governor, it would make a difference. Right now, there's nobody that looks like the District of Columbia that is a governor that can represent our interests, rural interests, democratic issues, liberal issues. And so we need it, the world needs it, and our disenfranchisement is a shame on America.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I say this from time to time. It's so absurd to disenfranchise the people of the District of Columbia, because isn't that like telling the people of Detroit that they can't drive, or telling the people of Los Angeles or Hollywood they can't go to the movies? Or, you know, this is what we do in Washington. And you're absolutely right, Charles. We have such an important voice on so many issues, and so many of us work here in the public interest, you know, that it's horrible that we're shut out. And I just want to add that I recently came back a week or so ago from India, where I participated in an economic conference. And they have a guy, a prime minister named Modi, who wants to turn the government, who wants to turn the government into a religiously based government. And the first thing he did to get one of the first things he's done to disenfranchise Muslims was he took statehood away from 15 million people in Kashmir. So the whole statehood, I mean, statehood was a big issue when I was over there. And, you know, that, so it's a tactic that's not only been used in the United States, but is also being used elsewhere in the world to disenfranchise and control people. And you're absolutely right that, you know, we're a very important voice, and to disenfranchise us is just not only affects us, but affects everybody in the country. And, you know, as Dr. King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I don't think that's any truer than it is here in the District of Columbia. You know, again, moving back to the hearing itself, once we have the hearing, even if we have enough co-sponsors to pass legislation, and we probably do have enough co-sponsors to pass legislation, once it gets to the floor and there's a vote, then we have to go on to the Senate. And even the most, you know, we can't get 60 votes in the Senate. We only have 33 co-sponsors. We're working to try to get Republicans to join on, but that's been a very difficult fight. So that's really, what do we do to mobilize in the Senate? Do you have any ideas on that?
Well, let me just point out something that that has kept me involved in the statehood movement, pursuing what some people consider an impossible dream. Well, if you believe that the arc of the universe bends towards justice, and I believe it does, then that means that it's not justice that can't prevail. It is injustice that can't prevail. And I want to say and offer that when God is on your side, no dream is impossible when his time has come. God Almighty determines what is possible in the world. And I want to call your attention to the impossible dreams that have become reality in my lifetime. In my lifetime, I was born in 1948. the last vestiges of slavery on the Southern American Jim Crowism were demolished when the time came for Martin Luther King's dream to become reality. I saw the Berlin Wall broke, crumbling down in a flash. I saw the racist, apartheid government of South America that had been stubbornly resisted and a violent liberation struggle and international condemnation was necessary, and it brought down that apartheid system without a whimper. When the time came for freedom, and I say right now, the time has come. I saw we all witnessed the election of Barack Obama that defied all odds and all the stereotypes against what Americans were willing to do.
Right.
Okay?
That's absolutely true.
But we've seen it happen. Recently, we've seen something I thought would never happen. The Confederate battle flag has been snatched down from Southern state houses, and in many of those states, it came in an instant when the time has come. And the time comes when people demand it. So the time has come for taxation without representation to end in Washington, D.C. Yes, this is a movement whose time has come. And we're not going up on Capitol Hill to beg Senator Brown, the hard work that you've done. You guys have done a great job, and we need to, as citizens of Washington, D.C., we need to demand freedom.
Well, that's absolutely right. And, you know, let's remind our listeners that what you said is exactly true. You know, Thomas Jefferson says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal, and that they are endowed by the Creator." We're not asking Congress to do anything special for us. We're just asking them to give back the rights that were originally given us by God, according to Thomas Jefferson. And
inalienable rights, they call it, Senator. Inalienable rights.
Right.
Now, one of the questions that comes up while people are confused, these agent provocateurs, they offer all kind of other solutions aside from voting rights.
Right.
They talk about retrocession, so forth and so on. So these people are asking, and there's this question out there, why statehood? I mean, I hear it often. Isn't there some other means?
Right.
Some people just don't see why D.C. should become a state. They say it's too small. Well, there are two states with smaller populations than the District of Columbia. There are nations with smaller populations than D.C. The reason
there are probably
as
more disenfranchised voters in the District of Columbia today than there were when the country was founded.
Exactly. You're right.
There's probably less people voted in the first election than are eligible to vote in the District of Columbia. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And I remind everybody out there that Jefferson also said that resistance to taxation without representation was tyranny, and resistance to tyranny was obedience to God. So I want to remind people that I feel personally that you not only have the right to stand and protest this injustice, but you actually have an obligation to do it. As a citizen, you have an obligation to stand up against this kind of tyranny. So what do you want to add, Charles? What haven't I asked you that you think is important?
Let me just reemphasize what you just said.
Please.
That's absolutely important. We have an obligation to resist tyranny, an absolute obligation. And for me, this is not an issue that I want to pass on to the next generation. I want to see it happen in my lifetime. But let me just answer, very succinctly this question as to why statehood. Well, the reason is simple. It's as simple as ABC. The United States of America is a union of sovereign states. Any entity that is a part of this union of states and is not a state is inferior to the states.
Right. Absolutely.
And its citizens' rights are inferior to the citizens of the state. In fact,
that's right.
According to the United States Constitution, territories, possessions, and districts of the United States are inferior to the states. They always will be. If you're not a state, you will not have the rights. Your citizens will not have the same rights as the citizens of a state. Okay?
That's
now,
right.
There are
That's
those who also
right.
callously ridicule our liberation movement by arrogantly proclaiming, well, D.C. will never be a state. In other words, that's a slave mentality.
Yep.
We ain't never going to be free.
Right. Well, you know, and that's absolutely right. If you're not one of the United States, because that's the way the government is organized. It was organized to have a federal government and state governments that share power. And if you're not one of the United States, you're inferior, and there's no way around it. There's nothing that you can do. Let me ask you just a personal opinion, since you knew these people personally, and I did not know them, unfortunately. But where are the Julius Hobsons and Joe Butlers of today? Are they out there? Do we have people
Brown.
Like that?
Senator Brown, that is the question, and it boils down to this: what about our so-called leaders and elected officials in D.C. today, who have taken up causes and who support bills and legislation that would leave Washingtonians disenfranchised, second-class shadow citizens?
Yeah.
Those individuals in elected office who really don't support statehood, who will not include full funding for the statehood delegation, who give lip service to statehood but not real support. Is such a person, whoever he or she may be, any less a traitor than Benedict Arnold, who was to the American revolutionary traitor? His name is a byword for treason and betrayal. His actions were treasonable because from a position of responsibility, he plotted with the enemies of democracy to keep us disenfranchised. Are these individuals, are they really helping us? Why are they not helping us? That is a question that I have.
Yeah, well, collaborators are, you're right, worse than the enemy, because they act as your friends, and that makes them much more dangerous and unfortunately more effective in what they do, because they try to convince people that they have their own best self-interest involved, and it, as you know there's a case in court right now. Representative Moreland, and as you already said, and as I well know, we've been to court many times. We've never succeeded in court. You can't have something declared unconstitutional. You're a lawyer, I'm not, but I think it's pretty clear that you can't have something declared unconstitutional that's actually in the Constitution. Our solution is statehood. It's not, which the court has decided is a political solution. So we need to go after it exactly the way you said. We need mass civil disobedience to make our demand, as Frederick Douglass said, is necessary. And all this other stuff that we do, the saber rattling, the going to court, the trying to find other budget autonomy and legal autonomy and all these other half steps are ridiculous. And it's like I like to say, it's like Rosa Parks agreeing to sit in the middle of the bus. You know, the point is that you pay the fare, you pick your seat. I am a citizen. I don't need citizenship. I am a citizen. I just want to be treated like a citizen. So we're running out of time here, Charles. What do you want to add? Because I really think that that you have such an important perspective on all this. I want to give you enough chance to make sure you fully express yourself. Is there anything you want to add to this, to our conversation?
Well, just again to agree with you wholeheartedly about the constitutionality. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution gives the Congress the absolute right to have complete jurisdiction and control over the district. So what the H.R. 51 does, it shrinks the size of the district to just include the federal enclave. And the rest of the city that includes people would be the state. And also want to emphasize again, as you have said, these people who have these incremental approaches ask us to wait. Well, justice delayed is justice denied. Unequal justice is inferior justice. Partial freedom is freedom denied. Democracy served up in increments is a cruel and cynical roadmap to never-ending political slavery. And that's what we have here. Home rule was an incremental approach. Home rule is a joke. It's the worst kind of instrument because it's served up every day as the only solution, a final solution. The only real solution, in fact, is statehood.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, I think it's really important to point out that the district clause, even if you believe in the district clause, if you believe that government has a right to, or it's important for government, to federal government, to isolate itself and make sure it's in control of its own jurisdiction, which was obviously what the founders, what the framers of the Constitution wanted to do, the statehood bill doesn't affect that at all. They'll still be in control of the Capitol. They'll still be in control of the White House. They'll still be in control of the government in every sense. The only thing is that we'll finally be in control of our own destiny, just like everybody else, not asking for any favors, not asking for any special treatment or dispensation or anything other than that which all citizens of a democracy are entitled to. And I just want to thank you for being on our show today, Charles. I think that your input is very important. I hope that our listeners out there will come on Thursday the 19th to the House Government Oversight and Reform Committee hearing. It starts at 10 o'clock. There'll be overflow rooms. We hope that we'll be able to overwhelm the Congress with people who are there to say, I demand my rights. I am a citizen, and I demand my rights to be treated like an equal citizen. So thank you, Representative Moreland. We know that you'll be back on the show again because you've been in the past and you've always been such a strong supporter. And the more and more, after 13 years, Charles, the more and more I find out about the situation that we're in, the more I learn every day, the more I realize how important a voice you are and how, you know, we should all take heed in everything you say about the issue, because you're so right and you're so experienced. So thank you. And I hope I see you on Thursday morning.
You will see me. And thank you again for all that you do.
Okay, thanks. And today we're going to leave you with the song. I don't know that there's any better song, as a tribute to Representative Moreland and all the people out there that stand up for D.C. statehood. This is Nina Simone with I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
Capital of this nation, 200 years.
give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.